envision three female attorneys coming together to have our voices heard. Each of us would have different opinions, different passions, different backgrounds, and different views. Although we are different and unique, we are able to come together to discuss our experiences navigating through the legal profession and this thing called life. Now, the vision has come alive, and we invite you each and every week to listen to us as we talk about what's trending in the news and our legal insights. Tackle real life issues that affect not only us as attorneys, but us as women of color. Guys, and welcome to episode 7 with No Further Questions. We're back, part 2 of Politics and the Law. Before we get started, let's run our disclaimer. Disclaimer. This podcast is intended to provide entertainment and general information. The information provided and the views given are not intended to constitute legal advice and should not be relied upon as legal representation. All views expressed on this podcast are our own and do not represent the opinions of any entity whatsoever we are affiliated with now or will be affiliated with in the future. So now we're back with part 2 again of Politics and the Law. And let's go around the table and reintroduce ourselves. To my left, we have...
That's me, right?
Yeah.
Hi, guys. This is Tria Hutchinson.
Hi.
And to my right, we have...
Sam Frage, what's up?
And of course, you have me, the lovely and the talented Brandy Lowry. Hate us.
Please pass the ball.
Hate us. There's always one hater.
No. Now there's two.
And we have brought back our special guest from episode 6. We have Mr. Demetrius Walker, who is to my left. And we have Mr. R.W. Bray to my right. Y'all want to introduce yourself? Tell everybody who y'all are again. Reintroduce yourselves. Give your background.
Yeah, it's good to be back.
Mr. Walker, you got something to say?
Same here. Happy to be back. I really thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Oh, no problem. Yay. So where we left off was we were delving into economics. We talked about immigration. We delved into economics. And then we're going to eventually get to prison reform. But we'll see how these economics go because, you know. But we left off on a very important question that needs to be answered. So, Taria, you remember what your question was from episode 6?
I think so. Such a long time ago. What happened to the middle class, people? Where is it? Where'd it go?
Aren't we still here? I feel like I'm middle class because I ain't making no money.
That would be lower class.
Oh, my bad. I'm lower class then.
Definition of.
Yes. No, seriously, from what I've seen is that it used to be a large middle class and it's slowly but surely shrinking to have a bigger lower class and, you know, the upper echelon.
So there's no middle ground in between. It's correct. Either you're poor or you're rich.
Classic question for an economist.
Yeah, I'd be happy to tackle this. There's a number of reasons, actually. And, you know, first and foremost, we have to look at our tax policy over the last 30 to 40 years. You know, supply side economics or trickle down economics, what many politicians like to label it as, is first and foremost ineffective. It actually widens the wealth gap between people. The other thing that people are failing to acknowledge or recognize is automation. You know, Dr. King, this is what he was most afraid of in his last book, Chaos or Community. Dr. King talks about automation and how this is going to, you know, steal jobs from people. And so I know in our last episode, we talked a lot about immigration and we were worried about immigrants stealing jobs from Americans. It's actually robots and artificial intelligence and machines who are stealing the majority of jobs from Americans. And so a business, you know, capitalism says that you want to reduce your expenses, keep them as low as possible, and find ways to reduce your cost, right? And so the rate that technology is progressing is now it makes a lot more sense to get AI or get a machine or get a robot that can do the job of a person because that robot doesn't need healthcare. That robot doesn't need to take any days off. It doesn't need to sleep. It doesn't have children, doesn't have family issues that arise in the workplace. And so automation actually is where, you know, the majority of our jobs are being stolen from. And so I bring it back to Dr. King. Once again, his solution for this was the guaranteed income, universal basic income. So we reset the rules of capitalism and we say that every American, you know, if you're an American citizen, you are guaranteed a certain level of income to prevent the fact that the wealth gap is becoming so wide between people these days. You know, there has to be something done, and the government's only responsibility, right, really is to, you know, preserve life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. And so if the wealth gap is so large that, you know, the average American is not able to pursue happiness, that's a problem, and that's something that needs to be addressed.
Who's going first?
Who's going first? Who is going first? Now, is my mic on?
Let's hear it.
I am just flabbergasted, okay?
Because I'm in a pickle
first
right
of
now.
All,
he said guaranteed income.
He's using a lot of words that sounded kind of like communism or socialism a little bit on one side, but then on the other side, I do not want to use no machine to check out at Walmart because let me tell you something.
But they at McDonald's.
They got a machine at McDonald's. Yes. No, I don't want to do that either. Just bring the people back. Bring the people back. Give the people back their jobs. I don't need you to give me no minimum salary. Just give the people back their jobs. They're the only people that's going to let me use my expired coupons.
Because that machine at McDonald's will not.
It will not recognize
them. It would not.
Go ahead.
But my thing is, I have the issue with the universal, the guaranteed income. So you're, okay.
Touch on it.
Help me understand. So does that mean everybody?
Everybody.
So even somebody who never went to college, law school, or anything?
Don't matter.
Is getting paid the same? Nah, that's not going to work.
Every single American citizen. This is why Dr. King was assassinated.
You're going to stop saying Dr. King.
Yeah, this is why, I'm going to stop saying that.
This is why, go read Chaos or Community.
I am definitely going to read that book. Because I don't understand. That means, so then if you're saying everybody gets paid the same, then no, like I worked hard to get to the level that I am.
I'm not discussing communism.
He's talking about the basis. He's talking about your cousin. I'm talking about that has the five kids that wasn't going to work anyways.
No, this is, look, we decide the rules of capitalism, okay? And so this is what people fail to realize. It's our decision. We elect people. We elect politicians. We have a government to represent our best interests, okay? Communism says that everybody gets paid the same thing, whether you're a doctor, whether you're a janitor, or whether you're a construction worker. This is not communism. This is a basic income that's your foundation, right? So you can decide what you do with this income, whether you want to invest it in a business while you work a job, but this is just a foundation. This is like you play Monopoly, collect your $200, you pass go.
Now hold on, because you're not going to fool me with this slick Obama talk that you're talking, okay? Because just because you sound a little bit like Barack Obama isn't going to stop. I know what communism is. I know what socialism is.
Yes, you do.
Okay?
And that's what not that it. Sound like. This is not it. This is not it.
Go ahead, please.
Can I just...
Yes. Come on, Republican.
This is my
biggest issue with individuals who talk like you're talking. We agree on the symptoms. Your approach to fixing that, to me, is classic socialism, and it also this is my opinion. I'm going to tell you my opinions, right? All right. It also is. It is what is wrong. It's not wrong. It is not constructive for America. It may be constructive for other nations. It's not constructive for America, and here's why. Your concept is that everybody gets a trophy. That's not reality, though. Reality is there are winners and losers in capitalism. Always have been, always will be. It means that if she opens up a business and I open a business and she happens to have better things in her business than I do, then I suffer the freaking loss that I tried, right? And I freaking missed, and she made it, right? Now, what you're saying is, oh, he missed. He should have a base guaranteed income.
Nope.
That's not it, because it steals humanity. It steals the creativity of humanity. And to her point, capitalism actually employs more entrepreneurs, inspires more entrepreneurs, because when we see something missing or we see that person doing selling great clothes, someone like her will be like, yeah, she sells great clothes, but her stitching is off. I got a better idea how I would make a better shirt or a better suit. And then she creates her company. She outdoes this person. That's not necessarily a bad thing. And I don't think everybody needs to be saved, to her point, especially not the one that's sitting on the couch.
Okay, so what I say to that is, once again, this is not socialism. This is common sense. This is this is not saying everyone should get paid the same thing for unequal effort and doing jobs that are, you know, different or separate from each other. This is actually being done today in a Republican state, in the state of Alaska. Every citizen.
Different dynamic.
Every citizen of the state of Alaska.
Which I can explain later.
I can explain it now. You know, every citizen of the state of Alaska receives a dividend from the oil and gas industry.
Explain it and why.
Just because, look,
the government
of the state of Alaska said, you know what, we could collect these monies directly from these, you know, oil and gas companies, and we can decide for you the best way to spend this money, or we can just give the pass the money directly on to you and let you decide what you want to do
but
with your dividend.
Royalties, though.
Here's the point.
Okay.
Here's the point.
Go ahead.
She's already going where I'm going.
That
particular state has a natural resource that is being exploited.
Yeah.
What the individuals living in that area, there's three dynamics. Number one, who's living in Alaska?
Nobody.
Population of Alaska is in and of itself sustainable.
So they don't count no more. Alaskans don't count no more.
No.
Shout out to Alaska, by the way.
Shout out to Alaska,
man. I know they don't have any law schools out there.
They don't count.
And I went to law school with a girl from Alaska. Shout out, Alaska.
Yeah. Being stationed in Alaska, let me tell you, what they're lacking is human resource. But when you're talking about a small pool that is also very manageable for a state, right? And what they're receiving is not guaranteed income. It's not.
It's a dividend.
It's a dividend.
Precisely.
Which is totally different for the listeners that are listening. Now, if we're dealing with something that's guaranteed, as she put it, then what we're saying is, regardless of what you're doing, you're going to receive the sweat off my brow, right? The fruit of my freaking labor because you breathe. No, you don't. Because you have two legs, two arms, and you're a human being, you're guaranteed everything that I have fought for, or went to school for, or
exactly
worked for.
Exactly what I worked hard for.
Now, humanity would say, Bray, by all means, brother, try and keep whatever you can that you've earned so that your family, your wife, and your children can benefit from your labor. And whatever is left over, consider that an offering and help out your brother, man. Now, I believe that offering and benevolence is not mechanical, meaning you can't make me do it because it's no longer benevolent. I have more trust in benevolence of human being than I do in the government telling me what to do with my money.
Okay, I'm glad you mentioned those things. I don't think that we're in complete opposition here. So what I'd like to ask you a few questions, if I could.
We ask the questions around here.
I think when people hear this concept.
This is a real podcast. Yeah. We're taking the podcast to a whole other level.
She done put her foot down. Yeah.
I know. No, go ahead.
They are attorneys.
This is a concept that when people hear, it brings up antennas. You know, obviously, like I said, you know, we look at why Dr. King was assassinated in the first place. A good book, by the way, The Plot to Kill King, discusses this in detail. So is the United States not an enterprise, a business in and of itself?
In and of itself, it is a business.
Okay.
Actually, corporation, to be exact.
Yes, precisely. The United States is a corporation, right? The United States job, and the only job, you know, really of the United States government is to keep people productive, to keep this enterprise afloat.
Negative.
You disagree. We are a corporation, and our job is to keep this enterprise afloat, okay? And so why would the American citizens not receive a dividend from our collective effort as a nation? Right, because what we're doing now, and this is where I think you and I will agree, is that government is not really good or efficient at doing most things.
True.
The government is only efficient at collecting taxes and handing out checks. That's it.
Can you respond to
that? The government
seconds?
Is not efficient or effective in doing anything but those two things, right? And so why would we not say, let's cut out the bureaucracy? All right, we have all these institutions doing X, Y, and Z and trying to take care of people and welfare and X, Y, and Z, and say, you know what? We'll just pay people directly a dividend, and if they sink, they sink. If they swim, they swim.
So we're going to wrap that up on economics and, you know, where are the middle class? This was a great conversation, so let's move on to prison reform. Let's discuss prison reform.
Speaking of free labor, let's move on to prison reform.
Really?
Expound on the free labor.
Where do you think your underwear is being made, honey? Private prisons.
And your furniture.
Well, I knew the furniture.
And your license plate?
Well, they've been doing that for years.
Yeah, but I knew the furniture. I didn't know my underwear.
I'm sorry, Taria. Unless it says made in China, then.
That's where mine say. Thank you, right? I checked it before I came in here.
Well, then why aren't you buying American-made products?
That's because it's made by prisoners? Because the prisoner is making my underwear? Well, let's, I guess that is. It. Yeah, let's talk about it. So, prison reform. Like, who wants to go first? You know, prison reform affects minorities. It affects Black people.
And Kim Kardashian.
We're not there yet.
It does affect her. Big business.
But she's, we're not there. Lawyer. She is going to be a lawyer. That's a whole other topic for another day.
I think we're finally getting it. I mean, honestly, I think when you look at the First Step Act, that was, and I don't think anyone disabled would say that was an incredible first start. In my opinion, it is groundbreaking in that it has the potential, and you might agree with me or not, it may have the potential of starting a snowball effect onto our states. And it wasn't before now.
First, can you talk about what is the First Step Act? I mean, yeah. We have an article about it, and for our listeners, they may not know exactly what the First Step Act is about, or they've never seen it. So we're going to pull the article up again, but just briefly in, like, 20 seconds or less.
20 seconds or less.
What is the First Step
Act? First Step Act is a prison reform bill. That's
okay, I'm going to give you 60 seconds or less.
All right, so it's a bill that addresses recidivism. It addresses where inmates will actually be housed. It addresses their sentences. It addresses their credit, that meaning that the credit that they gain while in prison. And it actually reduces their sentences.
I thought when you said credit, I was like, they're working on brother's credit scores while they're in prison?
Yeah, there are two credits that they get while they're in there. And that's what they call like good credit, good time credit, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's, you know, behavioral credit.
So who signed that bill? Like, let's just be clear. I mean, you're the Republican, and yeah. I don't think people might not know.
Trump signed the bill. But, you know, but I would tell you that the author of that bill was a white Republican who was very engaged with several Democrats in Congress and had been for over a decade. So he led the charge, but it was because he noticed something that Obama didn't do in 2015. So in 2015, Obama made great strides in the fact that he recognized that Clinton had made some huge mistakes in 94. So what they did was in the sentencing, this is probably a bit of history, but
let's pull up the 1990, because you're talking about the 1994 crime bill that the Clinton.
It's impossible to talk about where we're at now without talking about the Clinton.
So we also have an article for those of you that tune in to the video. We have what is called the 1994 crime bill. So, yes. Not that one, the other one, not that one. Sorry, y'all, for the people that
while she's trying to find it, right?
Yeah, so just tell us a little bit of history about the 1994 crime bill that brings us to where we are now.
So 94 is blatant. Clinton is like, hey, we got to crack down on the epidemic, right? And we saw that epidemic kind of graduate from 75 all the way to the late 80s, right? And by the 90s, it hit an all-time high. So then all of a sudden, I'm talking like New Jack City high, right? Remember that? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so all of
Nino Brown.
Yes. And so all of a sudden there was this huge issue, right? Where they wanted to crack down, but it was new. It was new. It wasn't like Coke was new, because that wasn't. Just the form that was new. So they're like, we gotta come up with something creative. So what they did was they created what's called is three strikes, you're out. So if you get three strikes, all of a sudden you were gonna get life, period. It didn't matter how much crack you had or how little crack you had, you were gonna go to jail for life. Well, what was cool about what Obama did was he got with Clinton. Clinton made this huge apology. Yeah, I was wrong. But I put 0.5 million black men in jail. I make a big apology. I did this wrong. I shouldn't have done that, right?
He didn't sound like that. He was a little bit more sincere.
Maybe he was a little more sincere.
He had a little bit more swag.
But it was still his fault, right? And I'm being facetious. But
being a Republican.
But I'm being a Republican.
We understand.
So this cat, apologized. Obama says, I'm going to save your skin. And this is what we're going to do. We're going to lower the sentences for possession, right? Now, the reason why we are where we are now is because there were Democrats and Republicans who said, that ain't enough. And then there was some that were like, we need to talk about this a bit more because he did not make it retroactive. See, that was his huge mistake, right? Obama did not go as far as he should have. And so now we're at a point where we have all these celebrities who are joining in and making these points. And these statements are correct statements, is that 94 was the worst thing we ever could have done.
But was 94 for state and federal, or was it for state?
Oh, yeah. It was, well, federal automatically affected the states.
Okay. So then with this, so with Trump signed, and I think it's December 2008.
Well, only federal. So we're talking about 109, almost 190,000.
But it's only federal.
But right now it's only federal. And now, just now, you'll probably admit now, the other states are looking to see if they can mirror what the federal side has done.
Yeah, I'm happy that we're at this point, but you know, I think just to give people a little history, I think it goes back a bit farther than the 94 crime bill. You know, we can start, if we want to, we can start with the Constitution and the 13th Amendment.
I knew you was going to start with something.
But we don't have to go that far back though, because you know, this doesn't all fall, and I'm independent again. I don't have a necessary a dog in a fight, Democrat, Republican, but mass incarceration started under Richard Nixon. You know, this is where that was the foundation of mass incarceration. It was, you know, and, you know, a lot of his staff came out and admitted, hey, we were locking up people of color and hippies because they weren't going to vote for us. You know, this is where mass incarceration started. Then you get Reagan, another Republican, who once again, say no to drugs. That whole crack era, you know, that was coming out of the early 80s, that's where we start to see the harsher penalties start to pile up for these drug offenses. And then by 94,
I definitely got something in defense of Reagan, but go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, well, I'm just giving everyone the whole history. If we want to, you know, really look at this, this is not a Democratic problem or a Republican problem. They both parties had a hand in where we are today in terms of mass incarceration. My concern is, right, federally, you know, we had, you know, the law, you know, Trump finally signed. What we're not paying attention to is immigrant detention, because I think the conversation has simply shifted from incarcerating American citizens and people of color to now incarcerating people who have no rights as American citizens. And so we've built all of these immigrant detention centers, and they're full, they're crazy full, overcrowded, packed, and these people have no voice whatsoever. And so that's my concern, is that the topic of incarceration is shifting, and we're not locking up as many Americans, but we're still housing people in detention centers in record number.
You may have someone to point there about how many people we're housing, but let me just throw some stuff out. To respond to what you said about immigration, 424 judges now sit working with asylum cases now, and that's something that we did not have 4 years ago. Over nearly 200 judges have taken office since Trump. And so that was a necessity. That was long overdue. People don't want to admit it, but go back and do the research. Now, when you talk about rights, right, the rights that they are given in these detention centers are the same rights that are in the law. So they have the rights that are in the laws. When you talk about rights, though, you sound as if you are hurt by the fact that they don't have certain things that Americans have. No criminal does.
I'm not.
Let me just finish my statement, right? So now what you see is this ultra argument about, oh, we shouldn't be taking these kids from families, and these people, they have rights too, and it sounds virtuous. But you know what the truth is? I actually was a ward of the state for a year. I was taken from my family, right? The truth is that we have a lot of people, a lot of young black males and little girls that are being taken by the government, and CPS doesn't care whether or not they black and their mom struggles from emotional loss, and the kid has some type of historical problem in the future because of being pulled away from their mother. That's been happening for years in the black community. All of a sudden, immigrants have the issue. Right? When they've been pulling us from our moms for years, immigrants have the issues, and everybody's a bleeding and liberal. That's not, in no way, unless of course they're gonna apologize to all the black moms whose kids were pulled from them, then I don't wanna hear anything about immigrants and being taken away, or the parents being split and all that, because they split us for years. And they knew that the effects would have have be negative. They knew that. But we weren't allowed to see our parents or go to our, we wasn't given detention centers or put up in hotel rooms so that we can stay with them while they served out their time, knowing that pulling us from our mothers would hurt us. So I digress, and I am not all that caring when it comes to the new argument of they need more rights. No, they get the same rights as anyone else. And if you do something that's illegal, you will suffer the consequences of committing a crime.
I have a question, though. You said that there were so many more judges that were...
424.
Were they appointed?
Yeah, there were roughly 100... You could be wrong. There were 190 appointed so far under his administration. There were, I want to say, 85 appointed under Obama's.
Okay, so majority of them were appointed under this administration. And then you mentioned CPS. Now, with CPS, when they take your child away, typically you have a permanency plan. Mm-hmm. And then you work that permanency plan, and that parent chooses whether they want to participate in that permanency plan.
I'm sorry. In that case, I'm talking about those who committed crime and go to jail. So right. when they're serving, they become a ward of the state, and that particular child is still monitored.
They can be. They can be a ward of the state, but it doesn't happen automatically. Right. So, obviously, from the family law side of it, you do an adoption and termination, and then there has to be reason.
Right, all
but,
that.
You
right.
know, sometimes they are foster care. So then my question to you is, if we're making that comparison between CPS procedure, right, and deportation procedures, are these individuals, one, are they able to bond out? Can they bond out for their freedom if they so choose?
Probably not if they're not legal.
If you're illegal.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So, also, can they give a plan in order, some sort of plan that they can work before they are detained or taken away or separated from their children?
You can't bond out, but you can go back.
Right, right.
When Americans commit a crime, that female who loses her child for all intended purposes loses her child. She doesn't have the option of having her child serve with her.
No, she does not have the option to have that child serve with
her. At all.
No.
Around her at all.
No, I understand that. Well, yeah. No, she doesn't have the child around her. But my question is, if we're comparing the two processes, it was presented. The way that you presented it is that they're similar, but really the procedures are quite different when we're talking about CPS and a permanency plan and whether you're working that plan and whether you commit a crime. Because even if you do, let's say you do get incarcerated, that doesn't automatically terminate your parental rights.
But it does mean that that particular child does not have, or the a mother does not have the option. She's not given the option to keep her nucleus of a family together.
No, she's not given the option, but when she finishes her time, she can return back to her home.
And I agree with that process. If you have adults that are coming over and they're deemed illegal, then we should have an area shelter for those children and allow for that particular parent, same way any other American would have to deal with the consequences, to fill out the term, figure out how to get back legal, or whatever the asylum cases are, go through all that, and then be reunited.
But my question is, if we're treating it like any other legal process, why can't these individuals bond out, have their case be heard, and if they're found illegal, then detain them?
Because the concept of bonding is then substituted by the fact that they can leave. An American can bond out.
Unless that option was a flight risk, right?
So in some cases it is revoked, but I don't know if it's most or not. But in some cases you can bond out, right? It's an option that's given
to
a criminal.
Topic too for another day. Bail reform.
Bail reform is another one we should talk about, right? But ultimately it is substituted with the fact that he or she may be able to bond out, but he or she cannot go back to life as it was before. They will still have to answer to the court.
Right.
That individual has the right to go back, still seek asylum, but they don't need to put up money. They can simply say, I'll go back and wait it out.
Look, so here's my problem with the whole situation, right? as Black Americans, as frontline witnesses to mass incarceration, all of us, everybody has somebody in their family they know is in jail. Ray Ray, Uncle Earl, that, you know, we all have people close to us who serve some time.
Uncle's name is not Earl, but thank you.
All right.
I know absolutely no one.
We're front row witnesses, many of us, to incarceration and the effects that it has on our families. And so when we do see procedures being implemented to reduce incarceration, that's good, right? But the illusion that incarceration overall is decreasing is what I'm concerned with, because incarceration is increasing. All right. We are detaining hundreds of thousands of people, and people are profiting from this. And this is another problem. The private prison industry, you know, completely conflicts with American ideals. There's no reason why you should profit from incarceration. You know, and I think there's
you
a couple
said it conflicts.
Yeah, you know, there's no reason private industry should profit from incarcerating people or having contracts to get their jail filled up or their detention center filled up so that they can get another contract, you know, and that's what's happening. And we see that happening here in Texas. You know, the people who wrote some of the immigrant detention laws are private prison companies, you know, who slid this through the Texas legislature like, here, this is what we need. We need to reclassify some of these places as child care centers. You can look this up. They wanted to reclassify certain immigrant detention centers as child care centers so they can detain people indefinitely. You know, and this is what's happening when you have private corporations working in, you know, conjunction with politicians to write our immigration policies. You know,
I still would call it a win, B. I still would call it a win.
And on that note, we're going to wrap up. We have talked about economics. We have talked about prison reform. And usually we do a rest my case, but unfortunately we are out of time. So we're going to have to put that over to our next episode, episode 8.
I know.
So thank you again for listening. You can follow, subscribe, everything to on like iTunes, SoundCloud. Follow us on Instagram at No Further Q. Follow us on Facebook at No Further Questions. And follow us on Twitter at No NFQ. Pod. And thank you, a special thank you to our special guests, Mr. Demetrius Walker and Mr. R.W. Ray, for coming on our show. Tell them where they can follow you.
You can follow me on Instagram at Vote for Meek. All my other contact information is there.
Yeah, just hit me up on Bray at rwbray.com.
And my lovely co-host as ever, where can they follow you, Miss Taria?
Where can you follow me? Follow me down the street. No, Simply Being T. On Instagram.
And Sam, are we following you today?
No, you're not. We're Y'all not. Know the rules.
We can't find you.
No Don't streets.
Follow me. But regardless, you can follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And of course, you know, this is Brandy, and you can follow me at Brand_Janae on Instagram.
Or call 1-800-BEDROOM-EYES.
Hey, and I'm still looking for that billionaire to pay them student loans. So if you out there. And I'm trying to get food out.
Which nobody knows what that means.
The City Girls do.
City Girls do. That is another episode for another time. Thank y'all. Stay tuned for the next episode.